This podcast is a presentation of UCTV.tv, University of California Television. Like what you learn? Help others discover UCTV podcasts by leaving a comment or rating in iTunes.
One of my favorite sounds in the world is the sound of an orchestra tuning. Because it means that the concert is about to start, it gives me a sort of thrill of nervousness. It also means that I've got about a minute left before the concert, so I can do whatever I need to do while the orchestra's tuning. Well, a composer, Edgard Varèse, thought that the orchestra sound of tuning was itself interesting enough to base a piece of music about. So the overture, if you will, for tonight's concert and for our concerts this weekend is Edgard Varèse's Tuning Up. It takes the sound of tuning and builds an entire piece about it. I think you'll hear exactly what we mean. And by the way, it does give me about 30 seconds or so to do a couple of things off stage. I'm just going to see what the score of the World Series game is right now. So, Peter, I'll let you tune.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. Orchestra, let's stand.
Wonderful hairpiece.
I have to send this. Oh, thank you very much. I'm just texting that photo to my wife. Oh, I'll never feel clean again, I can tell you. So that proves that not only can you wear small dead animals on your head at Halloween time, but that music can also be fun. What is also fun is making the great works of classical music, orchestral music, come alive. And you're about to hear a good part of one of the greatest pieces in our repertory. This is a concerto. And a concerto, in essence, is a piece about balance. It's a piece about balancing the force and the power of the solo piano part, in this particular case, with the massed sonorities, the big sounds of the orchestra. So we'll see how this works in the case of Johannes Brahms's first piano concerto. But before we play anything, of course, we have to welcome our soloist to the stage. This is my friend, colleague, and just an extraordinary pianist, Alec Karras. Alec, join us. Because it's Halloween, and because all thoughts are turning to sweets, and because when I was a kid, I always ate my dessert first, we're going to play the third movement of the piece before we play anything else. So you're going to hear the end of the piece before we hear the beginning of the piece. Partly because this shows a perfect case, a perfect instance of how Brahms balances the expressive ideas of the piano with the power of the orchestra. So let's start by just listening to a great piece of music, the third movement of Johannes Brahms' Piano Concerto No. 1 with Alec Karras as the soloist. Thank you. That's so much fun. And it's amazing fun for me to look both at the orchestra and at Alec playing the piano. And that's a concerto. It's a balance. I know Alec has a couple of things to say about learning the piece and what he thinks. So let's turn the microphone over to him. Do you have a microphone?
Can you hear me without a microphone?
It's just that the television can't.
Okay.
Microphone. There you go.
Can you hear me? Well, yeah, I think when I first thought of Brahms as a kid, what I associate Brahms with is bigness. So when you might have something like thirds in a Mozart or even Beethoven, in Brahms, it's double thirds, everything bigger. And I've played a lot of concertos, but nothing so big. It's massive in every sense. But I think for me now, what I love about Brahms, what I think he's a master architect. He's a master of form and of transformation. So you already heard in that last movement, it's a rondo, you heard. And every time it can come back, every time it comes back, because it's a rondo, that's what rondos do. It keeps coming back in different variations. But it's not just within the movement. I was thinking about this concerto, and I suddenly realized that the second theme of the first movement starts like that, which is same notes, except it's in major instead of minor. And so you see a lot of transformation of material from theme to theme. So a great example, if we do some of the first movement, is there's a beautiful little theme that comes before the second theme. So it comes in a little ways in the violin.
Then the piano?
The piano has it. Every time you'll hear that, it's different. In the development, in the middle of the piece, you hear it twice as fast. And then the best of all is a little bit later in the development, the piano is playing an accompaniment. And I'm accompanying the violinists who are doing, which is that same theme, sped up and kind of like a waltz. So you can listen for some of those things. I think it sort of blows my mind, I have to say, how you can hear this music as just a collection of really beautiful melodies, but they're all carefully constructed into this architecture, this musical architecture.
Great. Thank you, Alec. Thank you. So what I'd like to do right now is we're going to hear some of those themes, and you'll hear the way the piano plays them and then the orchestra plays back. It's a kind of conversation, but you'll see that it's a strange conversation between one person and about 60 people. So this is how we have to kind of manage our friendship. One voice, very powerful, very personal, many voices with a lot of sound. And since we're really thinking about a lot of sound, let's just see for a moment what instruments and what sounds are present in the orchestra. I'd like to take the very beginning of the first movement of the Brahms concerto. We'll just play the orchestral part, but can we build it up one instrument at a time so you can hear how Brahms is developing power? I think we should start, yes, let's start with the king of the instruments, the percussion, and James, would you play your part? This thrills me, I have to say. I wake up in the middle of the night to this sound, just the timpani alone.
Keep playing. I love it.
It's fantastic. We had to wait for that last little swell. And you notice how powerful it is, how much it actually sounds like nature, how shocking it is, how when you're sitting in your seat just waiting for the concert to begin and that happens, you sit up and you notice what's going on. But that's not all that's going on. We're going to have James play and we're going to have the winds and brass play. Actually, you don't really see the winds and brass very well, so let's have them stand up. This is our wind and brass section. Let's give them a hand. They may sit at the back of the orchestra, but they look down on high on all of us, sometimes passing judgment. So let us take timpani, winds, and brass and hear what that sounds like right at the beginning. To get the trumpet notes in before we went on. You heard all of those instruments, trumpets and horns and flutes, oboes, clarinets, bassoons, everybody playing together. It still doesn't sound quite like a piece of music until we have the entirety of the string section playing. Now the string section, and again, pardon me, we have to have the lid of the piano up so that you can hear that in balance. So you may not see everybody, and it's really unfortunate because the costumes are really good. So, but why don't we have the first violin stand up, just so you can see how many of you are. Look at all of you. It's amazing. And some excellent costumes. Add the seconds. Continue to stand. And some truly frightening costumes there. Now let's add the violas. Beautiful. Cellos can stand. They don't usually play standing up. Not an instrument for a marching band unless you're Woody Allen. And then finally, the mighty contrabasses, the tidal pull of the orchestra, standing. Oh, you were standing. That's great. Fantastic. Excellent. Now, string players, let's have you take a seat. We're going to play the beginning of the Brahms concerto now with everybody, and you'll hear what happens. So let's just hear a few seconds of that with everybody. I'm going to stop you here. This is how the piece begins, and you see how captivating it is right from the very beginning. Now, we talked about balance and the concerto. That's really what this is all about. And when we played the third movement, you notice that the piano started first. It starts with a piano solo, and the orchestra has to wait for its turn to come in. The first movement is exactly the opposite. We have an orchestral introduction, an exposition of the themes, and the piano actually waits for quite a long time before it gets a chance to play. But when it plays, I think, some of the most beautiful music in the last 160 years. It is just glorious. So what I'd like to do is this. Let's play for a little while. We'll stop at E if that's okay, Alec. And then I would love it if you would think of some questions for us. Because I'd love to talk to you about the things that you're interested in. We'll play a good part of the piece, let's chat a little bit, and then we'll play a little bit more. So thank you very much. This is the opening of Brahms' first piano concerto.
Yeah, it's that, you know. Oh, okay. That's not, you know what?
Now, if you know the piece, you know we stopped at a very exciting moment. So consider this a sort of commercial break before the excitement resumes. But let's take a couple of seconds and see if you might have any questions. And is there anybody who would like to start? You have a question.
When was pizzicato first incorporated into music pieces?
Oh, you're going to ask me a question I don't know the answer to. Nancy, when was pizzicato first incorporated into music pieces?
At the very beginning.
At the very beginning. What can you do to a string instrument? You can bow it. You can pluck it. No, you don't throw it. So this was one of the very first things that people did with string instruments, bowing and plucking, right, as Alex said, right from the beginning. And there's someone who is actually standing in the TV spotlight. So do you have a question, madam?
Yes. How many instruments are totally in the orchestra?
How many instruments are in the orchestra? That's a hard question. Look at all the people here. I just love this. Because the orchestra grew over time, at the very beginning of the orchestra, what we think of as the sort of classical model of the orchestra, we had a string section, smaller than this, but very much like this, and winds in pairs, and that means two flutes, two oboes, two clarinets. That's at the beginning of the 19th century, maybe the late 18th century, in other words, a couple of hundred years ago. But if you look at orchestras today playing modern music or music in the last 100 years, sometimes you see enormous orchestras. We've had as many as 400 people on this stage and these platforms in an orchestral piece. So they can be really, really big. Is there somebody over here that has a question? Oh, look at.
How did you become a conductor?
How did I become a conductor? No one else would do it, and it's not far from the truth. I became a conductor because I was in a meeting one day. I have to tell you, this is the actual honest story. I'm not making this up. I was in a meeting one day talking about this very orchestra. Did I ever tell you this story?
No.
I have to tell you how I started conducting you. So I was in a meeting one day talking about this very orchestra, and the conductor of this orchestra had left. And the board was searching for guest conductors. And I happened to be there not because I was a conductor, but because I was just in the meeting. And I remember the chair of our department said, "Do you know anybody who could conduct a concert?" Because you all had concerts set up and there was no conductor. And I saw myself in a kind of out-of-body experience raise my hand and I said, "I could conduct a concert." And the chair of the department, John Fonville, looked at me and he said, "But you don't know how to conduct." And I said, "How hard could it be, really?" So I conducted. That was the Firebird concert. Yeah. And I kind of fell into it. I don't know if I loved conducting, but I loved this orchestra. I loved that experience. That piece was amazing. It's still one of the best things that ever happened to me. And I loved it so much that I put my name in when they were looking for a conductor, and we were all surprised I was chosen. So thank you for that question. Thank you for the golf applause. Let's take a couple more. Let's do one over here, and then let's go over there, and then we'll play some more for you. Go ahead. What's your question?
Where are harps from?
Well, harps are, don't you think they're a gal? I mean, Alec, what is the answer to this?
They're from France.
They're from France, exactly. They came over on the boat. But they're a Gaelic instrument. Also, you find Celtic harps, played in Irish music. They exist in music from all over the world. You can hear harp-like instruments played in Indonesia and in Africa and in Latin America. And it's not so far from a guitar even, isn't it? You see pictures of them from biblical times, the lyre. They're one of the oldest possible. Do you play harp? Are you a harpist? You should start. We need harpists. Let's take one more question and then we'll go back and play some music. Yes.
I was wondering how difficult or rewarding or challenging it is for an orchestra to work with a choir.
Ah, that's an interesting question. What's it like for an orchestra to work with a choir? Well, it's an amazing experience, because some of the greatest music, the most fulfilling music we have, is also with choir. So if you think about the Beethoven Ninth Symphony, for example, or Mahler's Second, or the Berlioz Requiem, many pieces use chorus, and it's some of the most powerful music. But it's interesting because we make our sound in a very different way than they do. You are your instrument if you're a singer. That means if Peter gets a cold, which he's been known to do, his violin is still okay. You know, it doesn't sneeze. It doesn't lose its voice. But if a tenor gets a cold, which they have also been known to do, you know, all bets are off. So it's a very interesting relationship. And I feel like I'd like to even it up, and we'll take one. Sir, do you have a question for us?
How heavy is a bass?
How heavy is a bass? Now, do you mean that physically or metaphorically? Because you are the heaviest musicians I know. How heavy is a bass, Christine?
Oh, I don't know. I can pretty much...
But she is really, really strong. That's a very, very heavy bass. That bass is about 300 pounds, but she does it with one hand. Anything you'd like to add, Alec?
I want to just make one little personal comment. Even though I'm sure you both think that, you all think that Steve and I are probably about 30 years old, in fact, we've both been here for over 25 years. We met here over 25 years ago. And in all that time, we have been constantly playing together, and which has been one of the joys for me of being on the faculty at UCSD. We have played Stockhausen, we've played Bartok, we've played Beria, we've played a lot of contemporary music and 20th century classical music. This is a big deal for me because this is the very first time we've ever played romantic music, 19th century music. And even though Steve is world famous as a percussionist who has commissioned all these new pieces and, you know, as an expert in contemporary music, who knew? He's great at Brahms, and it's been so wonderful to finally do something older as well as all the new things that we do. So just wanted to say thanks to Steve for that.
That's very kind, Alec. Thank you. That's actually much more than I asked you to say, so I owe you $40 after that. So let's just play from where we stopped. And we're going to play the rest of the piece. You can have a seat. Thank you for your questions. I'm sorry we couldn't answer it. I promised you exciting music after the break, and here's what it is. We're taking it from C3, and we're playing to the end of the movement. Thank you.
been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.